I told you before that I just love this series of lessons, and how many times I shared with you that it would be wonderful to take everything that we stand for as a church, things that we advocate as beliefs, and to be able to go into depth in each one of those and to see what they are talking about. And so we're looking at these gifts that God has given to us. And this morning we have one on rest, restoration. And so many times you can look at these as health laws and regulations that we're supposed to have. But when you look at it from the perspective that this is a gift that the Lord is giving to us, and He opens up that treasure chest of gifts and hands us these wonderful things, well, so many times we can miss the gift aspect of that and what He's trying to do for us. And so this morning we get a chance to look at the concept of rest and what He's dealing with. And the lesson I felt touched on several of these ideas, and it's sort of a launching pad for us. The lesson is, it'll touch on some of these aspects and hope that you will go deeper into understanding what that is. And so I want to share this with you from three different perspectives. Number one, understanding that gift that God has given to us in physical rest, what that has to do with our bodies, our spiritual life, and so on, and what He's actually trying to accomplish in that. And then I want to look at it from another perspective of how God has given us this Sabbath rest. But then I want to go into something else that I never realized that He was trying to teach us about this, and it's pertaining to the Sabbath. But we will get into that in due time. By the way, if you want to read a good book, I recommend this here because of the constituents of this class, The Healthy Aging Brain. Now, if you did this in Sabbath school or the junior class, it wouldn't be quite as appropriate, but I think there are a lot of us on the edge of what we call aging. So if you want to find an absolute treasure of a book, it is absolutely wonderful. And several things about what's happening with that brain, not only the process that it's going through with aging, but also how to keep it as healthy as possible. And by the way, one of the capstones of that which keeps the brain healthy is relationships. But one of the greatest things that causes the brain to grow and to continue to be healthy is grandparents. When you are...
Glad all for coming through this class.
Amazing what they have found out whenever you're heavily involved with your grandchildren. There's a whole different dynamic that goes on from being a parent to being a grandparent. And they found out one of the most amazing things about grandparenting and what that does with the brain and keeping us alive and vital. Another thing that it talks about in here, and one of the reasons I brought this, by the way, the name is Louis Cozzolino, a very delightful person. He's a neurobiologist, and the Healthy Aging Brain. You do yourself a real favor to get this and to look at the things that he's trying to give. One of the things that he talks about is rest and the effect of rest upon the brain and how it keeps the brain active. And in our lesson, part of the thing was the rest and the restoration. And so when you look at how God has given us this gift of rest, and I never really looked at it so much about sleep being a gift, but the things that we're understanding about the brain and what sleep does for the brain, it is absolutely amazing. And as I shared with you before, they used to do MRIs on the brain, and that's just little pictures of just little teeny slices of the brain. But now they have one called the fMRI, which is a functional magnetic resonance imaging. And it's interpreted into like a video or a movie of the brain. And so they're actually watching it work. And what I'm going to share with you next, to help you understand the depth of what they've discovered, if you were to take all the beaches in Florida, which are going to be a little messed up here for too long, I understand, and if you took one grain of sand and tracked it in all of those grains of sand on the beach in Florida, you will just be able to begin to scratch the magnitude of what they found out. That they now can take one word and they can look in that incredible brain and watch that one word process through the brain and where it goes. They can see all of those intricate synaptic connections. Now, let me give you an idea of what that synaptic thing is doing. During the time that you go to sleep in REM, that the body is trying to do some amazing things during REM, and I'll share some of those with you in just a moment. But in order to do that, it does it through electricity and chemicals. And all emotions have their own chemicals. And they're transferred through what they call neurons. And the neuron looks something like this. And here's the stem, and here's the body, and here are the dendrites. And each one of those neurons can have up to 10,000 dendrites. And they will hook up to at least 15. Each one of those dendrites will hook up to at least 15,000 other neurons. And to give you a perspective of that, that if I took one of those grains of sand from the beach of Florida and you looked at that, you would be able to see 100,000 neurons in that grain of sand. We're talking about a pretty small feature. And in that grain of sand, there'd be over a million different connections just in that grain of sand. That size of a biopsy of a brain tissue. Now they're able to take one of those sparks, those synaptic sparks, and follow it through the brain. Now, there are as many sparks in that brain. One neurologist says, I can't count them. The only way I can relate to you how many sparks, and a spark represents the activity of the brain. He said, if I counted all of the synaptic, the little sparks that are going on, electrical sharks, he said I would have to compare it to how many atoms there are in the universe. That's going on in your head, especially every night when you go to sleep. So now they found that they can trace one word through the brain and to find out where it goes. And they made an amazing discovery that the brain, whenever you take one negative word, trace it through the brain, and they'll find out that it goes to a place called the amygdala, which is there causing us to, it is going to warn us or threaten any kind of threat. Well, that negative word then is going to have such an impact on us that it can lead to our destruction. They took one positive word and traced that through the brain and found out that it went to a different place. That word went to a place that promotes health and growth and connection. The negative word promotes death and disconnection. Now they got this book called The Neurobiology of We. How do we connect? What goes on and what promotes it and what hinders it? And so the amazing discoveries, and they said, we are just on the threshold. It's like us being on a launch pad, that we've had a telescope and we could look out there and we could see there are lots of stars, but where we are today is comparable to being on a launch pad for a rocket that's ready to go out and to search the universe. We are just now on the threshold of making some of the most amazing discoveries. Well, one of those amazing discoveries is about REM sleep. REM sleep. We spend approximately a third of our life in bed unconscious, if we're lucky. How many of you find that you have trouble sleeping? Going to sleep, staying to sleep, awakenings. Well, you need this. Yeah. Yeah, but we're not talking about doing it in church. At least you can tell the outside evidence looks like you're in meditation. So you got that going for you. And so what's going on in REM? Well, I couldn't cover that if we took three Sabbath school classes to understand what's going on in REM. But what they've discovered is every night you go into REM, and REM sleep is we have like five levels of sleep. And that deepest level is where your dreaming goes on. And those levels of sleep can be detected by the brain waves. And the deeper you get, the more almost flatline they get until you get into REM. And one neurologist said it's like being in a dark desert. Everything is dark. And then you have a city like the size of New York. And all of a sudden, someone threw the switch and on came every light in New York City. So you can't even comprehend anything of the magnitude of what goes on in REM. That brain is moving like crazy. And all of those synaptic connections that are going on. What they're finding out is everything that happened to you in the last 24 hours, during REM, the brain takes it in, and integrates it into your personality, and you wake up every morning different. Wow. 5% of all of those transitional cells are being regenerated every night. If I learn something during the day, they can see where it goes in the brain. And at night, they go in there, and lo and behold, that area lights up, it begins working, and they can actually see new neurons growing. And in a matter of 15 minutes, a neuron can be left, a stem cell can leave the hippocampus, go along all those neural pathways, drop in where it's supposed to be, and build this new neural pathway that goes on in your brain every night. And it's just absolutely amazing. Not only is it taking everything that happened to you during the night and building your brain, it's also causing you, your energy, to be rebuilt. You need to be in REM about 2 hours a night. If you have frequent awakenings, you're not getting into that. It affects memory. It affects longevity. It affects heart conditions. It affects lung conditions. It affects all kinds of things can happen just because of not getting this restful sleep. And by the way, if any of you are interested, I've got a packet that's available on promoting healthy sleep, how you do that. There are some wonderful things that are available today in helping us doing it, medicine-free. And so it's really helpful. But when you see what is going on in here, and you want to know the magnitude of who God is, read Job. Read the chapters where God says, "And I answered Job, where were you when I did this? And where were you when I did that? And I can hold this up and hold that up." Read that. And keep that picture of who God is and the activity of what He's doing. And then remember, that God says, "I come and make my abode with you. I make my abode with you." So not only are there a lot of physiological things that are going on during this REM, and by the way, REM just means rapid eye movement. That's what we called it since beginning of time, whenever men were labeling these things. They didn't know what was going on. They just said they fell asleep, and all of a sudden, the eyes start going all, whipping all over the place. And they noticed it in animals. Every living creature has to go in REM. If they keep animals, lab animals, let them sleep, let them eat, let them exercise, let them do everything, keep them out of REM, in 2 weeks they're dead. Wow. Man, there are some powerful things going on in there. You keep human beings out of REM, you find out depression sets in, suicide ideation sets in. All kinds of things happen. So God has given us this wonderful gift of sleep and the wonderful things that that does to help us. Now, at the end of the lesson, I want to share with you something that will change the whole perspective of this sleep and what God is trying to do. So when you look at that and the things that God has given us, just in this physiological gift, it just amazes me as I continue to read this literature, how you hear the language of those researchers change. You hear words of awe, words of curiosity, words of amazement, as they're getting more and more into this mind of man. Now they're finding out, we thought the brain was just here. Mm-mm. That whole brain is throughout our body. They find brain tissue in the heart. Has its own brain. They find characteristics about that brain that are in the stomach. So we're finding out this entire system is connected like that. And so here are these researchers trying to figure out, how did this get this way? It's amazing what God does. Doesn't matter what their philosophy is, as they dig in deeper and deeper and deeper, they've got to come out to the place to where they're looking up and they're saying there's got to be an incredible, loving power in this world that can create something so amazing as the human brain. In all of nature, nothing compares to this journey we're just beginning to take through this mind of man. Now I want to move on to the next thing. When we start looking at rest, we start thinking of another gift that God has given to us. And that gift is in the Sabbath. So God knows the heart of man. God knows what this man will do if he doesn't have some kind of guidance. He knows the attraction of what money looks like and what a man will go through to get it. He knows what the power of leadership will do and what a man will go through and do it. So God has established this Sabbath to try to put at least some kind of boundary around man and asking man to stop. Well, somehow, we have come to the place where as a denomination, we believe that our mission is to convince the world that there is a seventh-day Sabbath. And that seems to be our message. The fact of the matter is, it's so interesting, I'm listening to a lecture by Dr. Leslie Harding on the names and the character of God. And boy, if you ever get a chance, listen to some of those. They're just amazing. And what he was saying about, he said, we are our own worst prosecutor. We are our worst prosecutor. God not sitting up there and doing all this judging, because our life and the summary of our life is revealing what's in here. What is being revealed about us as a church? Good morning. Good to have you. What is this saying about us as a church? Well, what is it if you ask people, what do you know about Seventh-day Adventists? What have you heard? Come on.
They
what?
They go to church on Saturday.
Church on Saturday. What else?
They're an adult church. You don't smoke, you don't drink, you don't go to shows, you don't dance, you don't have any fun at all.
Yeah. When they held the general conference in New Orleans, they asked one of the men on Bourbon Street, said, did you know that the Adventists were here having a big convention? He said, oh yeah. He said, they came in with $10 and 10 commandments and didn't break either one of them. So what is the message that's coming through? And folks, I'm not trying to degrade what's going on. I hope you have a more magnificent view of what we're doing to project this message of God. Somehow, we believe that we're taking the most objectionable traits, and those are the things that the world is hearing. And we say, how did you get that message? Because that's what we're saying. So, when God gave us this concept of the Sabbath, we have set such tight restrictions that it starts here and it ends here, and you do this work and you don't do that work and you do this. We have all of this designed and can explain all of that. And so nobody has been able to get across any more clearly these truths about this seventh day. But what was God really trying to get across? So when we take this jewel of this gift of the Sabbath and we look at it, what is he trying to get across? Is it that he says, I'm the boss? What I say goes? I run this place? And I said, this day, the seventh day. And we say, yes, sir, and we will observe it.
But what he really wanted, because he knew we worked hard the rest of the week, and Sabbath would be a day of rest.
Beautiful.
Rest,
and what is it?
A positive way. Whenever we're negative, we will never influence anyone positive.
Wow. And look at that. What the brain does. Any kind of judgment, any kind of negative statement is causing people to go like this.
Right.
And so go ahead, Carol. I didn't mean to interrupt you. And what else do you see with it?
Well, it's a blessing.
Okay.
Sabbath day is a blessing where we can get our thoughts together and we'll have time with our Creator and with our family.
Okay.
And with our friends.
Okay.
And instead, I grew up that it was very, very, very important to be sure to hand out literature on Sabbath.
Yes.
And do those things.
Yes.
And I'll tell you, I hated it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this doesn't make the person bad or whatever it was bad, but it's not something that's appealing. But yet here you are as an adult keeping the Sabbath. But you're looking at it from something that you're probably telling your children a little bit different than what you were told,
right.
What made it objectionable. No, I didn't mean... Go ahead.
We tried to make the Sabbath enjoyable to the children.
Okay, so you're trying to put where Christ says it's a delight. You're trying to put that in there. That's wonderful. What about the rest of you? What do you see that the Sabbath is trying to do?
Well, God created the Sabbath for man, not man for the Sabbath.
And what does that mean for you? How do you interpret that?
Well, He created the Sabbath because He loves us and wants us to have that day of rest because He knew when He made us that we needed that.
Okay, so here's a wonderful gift, God knowing ahead of time that we need something. What else does that mean? Think on it.
Break from everyday activities.
Okay, anybody else?
Well, the problem is some people, when you talk that way, they say, well, I can do that on Sunday.
Sure.
Well, then you have to look at the very beginning where God set aside the Sabbath as a memorial to His creation. Mm-hmm. If you believe in creation, that's the reason that you worship on Sabbath.
Sure. And so it looks like an arbitrary command.
Well, not really. He just set it aside for us.
Yeah, but I mean, God said, let's see, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. No, I'm just going to say Saturday. That's arbitrary. It doesn't seem to be any reason.
We're made in God's image. Is that right?
The what?
We're made in God's image.
Okay.
God worked, as she said, God worked and created the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't say, and He created the Sabbath so man could rest.
Mm-hmm.
It says He rested.
Yeah. And what does that mean?
Day. That means that He knew He needed time Himself to reflect on what had been taking place, reflect on His universe that He's made, reflect on His love that He has for everything that He has created.
Okay. Did He get tired?
I don't know.
Okay, look over in Isaiah. It says God never worries. Wearies.
Right.
Isaiah 41:10.
But yet he felt it was important to rest.
Pardon?
But yet he felt it was important to rest.
Yeah, and so I wonder. I went through that Bible and I looked at the word rest. I found out that the English word for rest is used for 33 separate Hebrew words that we just say rest. And they've got 33 other pictures they're trying to tell you about it, and we just say rest. In the New Testament, there are 17 separate pictures in words, and we take and cover them all by one word, rest. Because we haven't found a way to slice it up the way the Hebrew language and the way the Greek language did to try to convey another message. And I got to hurry here because I've got to get to the third most important one. So what other reason do you see with the Sabbath? Come on, real quick.
Is that our rim?
Pardon?
Is that our rim from God?
Wow. That's what I love about this class. It's like, whoa, where'd you come up with that? In fact, in one of our seminars, what was one of the questions the lady had about the devil?
Oh, was the devil naked in the Garden of Eden?
Yeah.
And you might preach it.
And folks,
I heard it wrong.
Yeah.
It was an REM.
Folks, that really, on the surface of it, it's comical, but when you look at it, what happened to Adam and Eve when they fell?
They were naked.
Well, did the devil have some kind of covering that when he fell, he too became naked? So, I don't know if that's God's rim. In a way, I think it is. Wait until I get to this next section. So, let's look at what the intention was for the Sabbath. One of them is to reflect that He is the Creator. And I'm telling you, go and take the words from God's mouth in Job about what He says He's busy doing. Now, it's a reflection that God is a Creator and we are dust. He's the Creator, and we are not. He tries to remind us where we came from and everything we're seeing, where it came from. Why else? What else does the Sabbath commemorate? Real quick.
Rob, you're saying this, but I'm going to say it in a different way. We really don't understand our identity without the Sabbath. And a world tries to tell us that we have no value unless we look a certain way or can do a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
Every Sabbath, God says, you know what? You belong to me. And not because of anything you did. In fact, you can't do anything, but it's because of what I've done.
Yes.
And it is our identity. It is our self-esteem. It is who makes us healthy to know that.
So it gives us an identity, and not just an identity in that, you know, we keep Sabbath. There's something that He's doing for us, and that goes on. Okay, another idea. Well, let's go through it, because my time's getting slow here.
It was complete. He had finished.
Oh, that was complete?
It was complete.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it says that God did. He wasn't tuckered out. He said he stood back and he refreshed himself as he looked around and said, ah, perfect. Perfect. God was reflecting on his own work and was amazed how perfect it was. The other thing the Sabbath was to do was to commemorate that Israel was taken from the land of slavery. So really, if you look at it, there is no command to keep the Sabbath until Sinai. Did you realize that? No command whatsoever. And then when you look at the commandments, when I told you that they're in the future tense, that the commandment is a promise of what we will become, he says, when you get to know me, the way it is your privilege to know me, you'll want to spend time with me. That will be one of the characteristics that you want to spend time. So it not only commemorates the creation, it also commemorates God delivering them from slavery. And it also commemorates, and he tells us this, that when we get together in the Sabbath school class, in the church, that we have time to stand back and to be amazed at the power of God working in the lives of other human beings. When I look and I'm amazed, like Paul said, who did this to me? And I see the work of God and what He's done upon my life. And I see the work of God, ongoing work of God, working in the lives of other human beings, that when those people who admire that and admire God and get together on Sabbath and raise their voices in praise and in song, guess what you hear coming out of that church? Absolute joy about what God is doing in my life. But I want to add one other thing. When God says, you will not enter my rest to the Jews, what was he talking about? Well, the commentators will say that they didn't get to go into Canaan. What I discovered is what the author of Hebrews was trying to get across. He says, I swore in my wrath that you would never get to go into the land of Israel, or of the promised land. Well, I discovered something else. I don't have time to look it up. Isaiah 57. What is God's description of the wicked? We got to read. Look it up. Look it up. Isaiah 57. You can usually tell where I've been reading and where I've been studying in my Bible, because when I pick it and open it up, it falls back out to that place. Isaiah 57. Look at verse 19. What I was talking about, when you get to know him the way it is, look at verse 19. What does it create? It creates praise on our lips. We cry out, peace, peace to him who is far and to him who is near. That's our mission. Crying out to people, peace, peace is available. And look what he says. For the wicked are like the tossing sea. The tossing sea, for it cannot be quiet, and its waters toss up refuge and mud. There is no peace, says my God, for the wicked. Now, is that a description of what they're like? Is that what he's condemning them? He's saying, no, that's what their life produces. What is our job? In the very next chapter, look at what he says. Cry aloud. Do not hold back. Raise your voice like a trumpet and declare to my people. Who are my people? He said, we're all written on the hand of God. Cry aloud to my people their transgressions, and to the house of Jacob their sin. Because what are they doing? They find no peace. They find no rest. Inside themselves is this horrible rushing sea that stirs up all this refuge and this mud. And what does he say? Yet they seek me day by day and delight to know my ways, as a nation that has done righteousness and has not forsaken the ordinance of their God. They ask me for just decision. They delight in the nearness. And they say, we have fasted, and thou did not see. Why have we humbled ourselves, and thou do not notice? So what he's saying, we go through all of this religious stuff that you require. Where are you? Where are you? Why are we doing this stuff in vain? Behold, you fast for contention and strife, and strike with a wicked fist. You do not fast like you do today to make your voice heard on high. Is it not a fast like this I've chosen, a day for a man to humble himself? Is it for bowing one's head like a reed, and for spreading out sackcloth and ashes? Will you call this a fast, even an acceptable day of the Lord? And what they were saying, what he's saying was, you've made yourself a spectacle, and people come by and say, oh, he must really be religious. Look what he's doing. Look at all the trappings of this religious garbage. Garbage. Is not the fast which I choose to loose the bands of wickedness, to undo the bands of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free? That's what I've asked you to do. Not to play church, not to convince people of truths, if you have experienced the freedom that comes, go out and do what has happened to you. Is it not to divide your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into the house when you see the naked to cover him and not to hide yourself from your own flesh? Then your light will break out like the dawn, like the sunrise. And your recovery, this will do such wonderful things for you because your recovery will speedily spring forth. And your righteousness will go before you. The glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will cry and the Lord will answer, "Here I am." When we need Him so badly because our passion is to go and to relieve the burdens and the troubles of the world and to share those things, not to advocate a certain doctrinal position, but that we have experienced freedom and we cry aloud, "Spare not." Now every time that I get into these lessons, and my wife and I have a habit of talking them over and stuff, she always says this dratted word. I hate it. She says, "How? How? You spent all this time telling me what?" And I'm so frustrated, I said, "I don't know how." "How?" And I said, "You tell me how." I said, "No. You tell me." She says, "What do you do?" "Well, I don't know. I open up the Bible and I study, and it doesn't make any sense to me. And I fall on my knees and I beg Him, please help me to understand. And something happens inside and I begin to understand and I get a little bit deeper inside into Him and my heart thrills." And she said, "Well, how else do you do it?" "Well, I go to work. And when I'm sitting there in my room, I know my Father inhabits my body. I know He's my friend, He's my companion. So when I go in there, I believe God has sent those people to me. And so I try to hold Him up before them and I try to be touched by the feeling of their infirmities and I try to do what I can to reach out." Do you know what God is wanting us to do? The greatest thing that He wants us to do is to reveal to people what He's done in your heart. That is the how of proclamation. When I was on my knees, I reached out to Him and He heard me. He healed me. Why do you think we are asking? Anybody have any good things to say? Because we want to look over your shoulder and see God's activity in your life. Would you look at this? Oh! I got to read it. Christ is the source of every right impulse. He is the only one that can implant in the heart enmity against sin, every desire for truth and purity, every conviction of our own sinfulness is the evidence that the Holy Spirit is at work in our heart. Every right impulse, every desire to do anything to change. There was a funeral just recently, and I'll quit. There was a funeral just recently in a Baptist church, beautiful Baptist church. Little old man got up, apparently was a former preacher. Reva got to see this and said he came up to the speaker and he says, "Has anyone ever had anyone do something kind for your child?" Oh, a lot of hands went up. "What did it make you feel like?" Responses, "Oh, it feels wonderful when you see someone loves your child enough to do something so kind to them." He says, "That's exactly how God feels when you reach out and touch one of His children. Father in heaven, thank You for the precious gifts that You have given us, the gift of rest, the gift of sleep, how this marvelous brain of ours is regenerating. But I know that when we go to sleep and we've been exposed to Your Word and we hear these positive things of how You love us, that those things now we can see them floating into our brain and going into a place that promotes health and growth. And that at night when we fall asleep, that beautiful, beautiful sleep, You're at work. You take those things we've been exposed to and we hear the sound of cranes and buzzsaws and concrete being poured, reshaping our brain after the image of the One to whom we have been exposed. Oh, Father, reveal Your loveliness to us. May we recognize that every impulse for any good, every impulse to reach out and to touch another human being, is Your Spirit working upon our heart. And when we do it, we're proclaiming Your character. We're drawing people to You. Bless us, Father, that others may know through our lives what a wonderful person You are. Thank You in Jesus' name. Amen.